You spend like 3 weeks mastering a new piece of software. You learn the menus, you memorize the keyboard shortcuts, you really find your
Yeah,
rhythm.
you get that muscle memory going.
Exactly. It feels permanent, like learning to ride a bike.
Yeah.
But then overnight, an update drops that makes everything you just learned completely useless.
Oh, yeah. It's brutal.
Right. And with artificial intelligence tools right now, the goalposts don't just move, they completely vanish. You're just constantly forced back to being a beginner.
Which is, I mean, the friction of constantly having to relearn your tools is exhausting. We are trying to build serious, lasting workflows on top of what is basically digital quicksand.
Okay, let's unpack this because
Yeah.
instead of chasing, the absolute newest prompt trick for the specific model that shipped just yesterday, there is a totally different way to look at
A
this.
much more sustainable way, yeah.
Right. We're diving into a guide updated in May 2026 called Practices That Hold Up Tech with Darren. And the mission of this deep dive is to basically shortcut your learning curve. We're focusing exclusively on the cognitive and ergonomic habits that work, whether you are talking to Claude, ChatGPT, Copilot, or whatever inevitably launches next month.
Yeah, and to do that, it requires adopting a vendor-agnostic
Well, the
stance.
vendor-agnostic stance.
Right, because the tools themselves are changing at a breakneck pace, but the cognitive traps of human-AI interaction, those remain entirely
You
constant.
just keep making the same mistakes.
Exactly. We fall for the same illusions of competence, we get lazy in the exact same ways, and we fundamentally misunderstand what we are actually interacting with.
And it starts before you even type a prompt, which I found fascinating. Darren points out that the physical and digital setup, like the actual ergonomics of your workspace, completely dictate your success or failure.
Yes, this is the concept of picking the right surface for the job.
Right. So break down what a surface actually is here.
Well, every major AI tool now spans multiple surfaces, right? You have the web app, a desktop application, the mobile app, maybe a command line interface, or a browser agent.
And the cognitive trap is just reaching for whichever one happens to be open.
Exactly. You grab whatever is closest in that exact moment, which leads to what the guide calls the wrong surface tax.
It's like trying to write a complex novel on a smartwatch just because it's the device already attached to your
That
wrist.
is a great analogy.
I mean, it's technically possible to tap out the letters, but you are fighting the form factor every single step of the way.
Right, and that wrong surface tax might seem small for a single quick query, but it compounds massively over a work week.
Oh, I bet. So how should we be delegating these surfaces?
So, desktop apps, they excel at tasks needing global hotkeys or interacting directly with your local file system. Mobile apps, on the other hand, those are strictly for ambient interactions.
Like using voice mode while walking the dog?
Yes, or commuting. But trying to architect a complex database on your phone, that's going to lead to a really shallow, frustrating result.
And the web app.
The web app is for canonical behavior, meaning that's where the platform drops its newest features first. It's where the core experience is the most stable.
Go, but wait, what about the more technical surfaces? The guide mentions ELIs and IDEs. For those who don't spend their days, deep in code, what does that actually mean in practice?
Right, so an IDE is an integrated development environment. It's the specific software where programmers write code. And a CLI is a command line interface, that black box with text where you type raw commands.
Like straight into the computer's operating system.
Exactly. When you use an AI integrated directly into those surfaces, it already sees your code, your file structure, your whole immediate working environment.
Oh, so it has context automatically.
Yes. Bringing a generic web chat into a deeply integrated coding workflow forces you to manually copy and paste context back and forth endlessly. You want the AI living directly inside the loop you are already in.
Put the tool where the work happens. Makes total sense. But setting up the workspace isn't just about picking the right app, right? It's about managing the AI's context. And this brings up a massive debate from the guide Global Memory versus Scoped Projects.
This is a big one.
I have to be honest here, I actually love it when my AI remembers things about me.
People do, yeah.
It feels like I'm talking to a colleague who actually knows my quirks and preferences. Are we really saying we should just nuke that feature entirely?
For substantive professional work, yes. Global memory is a massive liability.
Wait, really? A liability?
Yes. The guide refers to this as the hygiene of AI. You see, the underlying mechanism of global memory relies on semantic vector search,
Okay.
meaning when you ask a question, the system mathematically scans your past conversations for keywords or vaguely related concepts. And then it automatically injects them into your current prompt behind the scenes.
Oh, I see. So if I'm drafting a highly formal business proposal and I happen to use the word organic, the AI might suddenly scan its memory, find that I asked for an organic dog food recipe 3 weeks ago, and just weave my dog's dietary restrictions into the executive summary of my proposal.
Exactly. Because the AI doesn't understand context the way a human does. It just sees mathematical proximity between words.
That is wild.
So the convenience of it, remembering your bullet point preferences, is completely eclipsed by the danger of it injecting unpredictable, irrelevant surprises into high-stakes work.
So what's the fix?
The cardinal rule is to use a project per workflow, not per topic.
Meaning, I tune global memory off completely in the general settings, and instead I create a tightly scoped project or workspace specifically for, say, Q3 financial reporting.
Spot on. Within that scoped project, you upload only the relevant spreadsheets, set specific rules, and establish hard boundaries.
Like telling it what not to do.
Yes. You explicitly state to the model, this topic is out of scope. Scoped projects run on predictable rails. Global memory runs in a minefield.
Okay, so let's assume the workspace is flawless. We are on the right surface, global memory is off, we have a tight project, we type a prompt.
And now we face the most dangerous part of the entire process.
The output. And you know, you might naturally think the biggest risk is the AI just getting confused and spitting out complete garbage.
But it's actually the opposite.
Right. The greatest risk is that the AI is overwhelmingly confident.
Yes. The single most expensive failure mode in this technology is plausible but wrong.
Plausible but wrong. That sounds like a guy in a tailored suit who confidently gives you incredibly detailed directions to a restaurant that actually closed 10 years ago.
That's perfect.
You don't even think to question him because he looks and sounds like he knows exactly what he's talking about.
And that happens because of how large language models are built. They predict the next most mathematically likely word.
Right. They aren't looking up facts in a database.
Exactly. They are optimized for fluency, not truth.
Yeah.
They excel at structuring sentences beautifully, sounding authoritative, and mirroring the tone of absolute expertise.
Even when the underlying facts are completely fabricated.
Yes.
So you read a summary, it flows perfectly, the bullet points make logical sense, and it completely bypasses your human skepticism.
You don't realize it entirely hallucinated a crucial revenue number until you present it to your board of directors.
Ouch. But wait, isn't AI supposed to be our ultimate fact checker now? If I have to manually click every citation link and sanity check every single cell in a spreadsheet, aren't I just doing the work myself? Like, what's the point of using the tool?
This is such a common reaction.
Yeah.
And you are hitting on the core illusion of AI productivity.
Which is?
We assume the time saved is in the thinking, but the time saved is only in the generation.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Human vigilance simply does not scale. If your strategy is, I'll just read the AI's output really carefully, you will eventually fail.
Because you just get tired.
Exactly. Your brain will get fatigued, the fluency of the text will lull you into a false sense of security, and you will miss the lie.
You cannot rely on raw attention span.
No. You have to build mechanical verification systems.
Mechanical over vigilant. Give me the breakdown of what a mechanical check actually looks like in everyday practice.
It means setting up a system where the failure is caught automatically or caught through an unavoidable physical action.
Okay, so for code.
For code, it means relying on test-driven development. You write a piece of code that tests for a specific outcome, a test that fails initially.
Right, a red test.
Then you let the AI write the software. You only accept the AI's work when your independent test passes. The test is the mechanical contract.
And if I'm not a software engineer, say I'm doing market research.
For research, the mechanical check is your mouse click. You do not accept a summary based on a link unless you physically click the citation, open the source document, and use the search function to find the exact claim the AI is making.
So you actually verify the primary source and for numbers.
You cross-reference the AI's output against the raw source file. If the AI misread row 14 as row 15, all of its subsequent brilliant reasoning is entirely worthless.
Man, that's brutal but true. What about just written drafts? If it's an important email or an internal memo?
Time is your mechanical filter. You read the draft cold the next day, preferably print it out with a physical pen in your hand.
Oh, taking it off the screen entirely.
Yes. The overarching rule is that your verification mechanism must be significantly cheaper to run than the cost of the mistake it catches.
So a failing code test takes milliseconds, Clicking a link takes 5 seconds. Sleeping on a draft takes zero effort.
Right.
But sending a plausible but wrong financial report to a major client, that costs you the account.
Exactly. And once you accept that you must mechanically verify everything, it fundamentally changes how you prompt.
You stop asking the AI to just do the work and start proactively steering it.
Yes.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Because new users tend to think that if they give the model more freedom, it will be more creative. So they leave the prompt wide open.
Which is the worst thing you can do.
Right. And Erin points out that specific beats vague every single time.
Because a vague prompt mathematically forces the model to fall back on its defaults.
So if you ask it to write an article about marketing,
it has no constraints to guide its probability engine.
Oh.
It takes the safest, most generic path through its neural network. You end up with a mathematical average of the entire training corpus.
The average of the corpus. That makes so much sense. Writing a massive, vague, open-ended prompt is like trying to order a 5-course meal in one breath at a drive-thru, hoping the chef gets all the nuances right without giving any specific instructions.
You are just going to get the most average, middle-of-the-road burger imaginable.
Exactly. So we need constraints.
Constraints act as the steering wheel. They don't stifle the model's creativity. They narrow its search space so it can find the highly specific, valuable combinations of words you actually need.
So we're talking about specifying things like audience. Are we talking to a senior engineer or a high school student?
Yes. You dictate the format pros, bullet points, a markdown table, the length, the tone.
Acceptance criteria, too. Telling it exactly how you will judge if the answer is correct and specifically stating what is out of scope.
Vague in, generic out. Specific in, useful out.
And this really shifts how we should pace our interactions. Instead of that breathless drive-through order, you know, the dreaded mega prompt where you paste 3 pages of instructions at once experienced users decompose the task.
They break it into a cadence frame, draft, critique, iterate, polish.
Frame, draft, critique, iterate, polish.
Right. You start by giving the model the high-level goal and the constraints. And you ask for a very quick, rough outline.
Just a sketch.
Yes. Then you critique one specific part of that outline. You iterate on that small section. And finally, you polish.
It feels like it takes longer, though, because you're sending 5 messages instead of one.
But it is dramatically faster end to end. If you send a mega prompt and the model misunderstands paragraph 4, it weaves that misunderstanding into the entire document.
Oh, and then you spend an hour trying to untangle it.
Exactly. Iteration catches the drift early.
Part of that iteration is utilizing a feature that Darren calls the most underused button in every chat interface branching.
Yes, the edit button.
Because when a chat goes off the rails at, say, turn 10, my instinct is to just hit delete, wipe the whole thing, and start completely over.
Which destroys all the brilliant, hard-won context you built up in the first 9 turns.
I know. It's a bad habit.
Instead, you use the edit button on your previous message, the one right before the AI went sideways.
So you tweak your instruction and resubmit it.
This creates a branch. The AI forgets the bad response, keeps the good history up to that point, and tries a new trajectory.
Okay, I'm definitely saving that one. But even if you branch perfectly and use strict constraints, you might suddenly notice the AI's answers getting noticeably dumber.
Oh, yes.
And this isn't a hallucination. This is an actual platform mechanic. Silent model fallback.
This is perhaps the most insidious trap in modern AI platforms.
Explain how this works, because it's wild.
So these models require massive amounts of compute power. To manage server loads, platforms implement soft usage caps.
Behind the scenes.
Exactly. When you hit your invisible limit, the platform doesn't lock you out or show you a warning screen. It quietly, silently demotes your session to a smaller, cheaper, much less capable model.
It's like ordering a premium luxury rideshare, and halfway through the trip, while you're blindfolded, they quietly swap your luxury car for a noisy moped.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
The ride keeps going, but it's suddenly a terrible experience.
And because users tend to anthropomorphize the AI, they think, wow, the AI is getting really tired and losing focus today.
You blame the AI's brain, when in reality, you just got bumped down to the budget tier.
And voice mode triggers this a lot, right?
Constantly.
Yeah.
Because transcribing audio and generating voice responses eats through your compute budget incredibly fast. You must actively monitor the model badge.
That tiny text tucked away in the corner of the interface.
Yes. If the logic suddenly falls apart, check the badge. You were likely downgraded. Stop working. and wait for your usage window to reset.
Okay, so we've mapped out the chat interface, we know how to steer with constraints, we know how to mechanically verify, we're watching the model badge.
But chat is ultimately passive. It waits for us to prompt it.
Right. And now we are crossing into an entirely different paradigm, the agent era.
A profound shift.
Because agents are models equipped with tools.
Exactly. They don't just generate text for you to read. They take active steps. They read your local files, write new code, send emails, modify databases, navigate websites on your behalf without you pressing enter for every step.
The stakes go from, oh, I have to rewrite this paragraph, to, oh no, the AI just emailed my entire client list the wrong pricing tier.
Yes. The guide urges treating any agent like a highly capable, incredibly eager, but fundamentally naive junior employee on their very first day.
Right. You'd never let a day one intern push critical code to your live servers without looking at it.
Never. Agents require three non-negotiable constraints. They must be verifiable, scoped, and reversible.
Let's break those down. So verifiable means?
Every action must generate an auditable log. If the agent changes a file, you need a transparent trail showing exactly what it read and what it altered.
Okay. And scoped means the principle of least privilege.
Yes. You grant the agent the narrowest possible permission required to do that specific task and absolutely nothing more.
So don't give an email drafting agent access to your system's core settings.
Please don't.
And reversible. I assume that means prioritizing drafts over actual sends?
Always. Mm. The agent writes the draft, but a human must click the final send or deploy button.
Okay, I am going to push back here. If I have to review every single email draft, audit every system log, and manually click approve on every action, am I actually saving any time?
It's a fair question.
Because the whole promise of an autonomous agent is that I can set it and forget it while I go focus on bigger things.
That is a marketing promise, not an engineering reality.
Ah.
Darren's guide mandates a calibration period. For the first month of using any new agent workflow, you must spot check everything. You read the logs. You build statistical trust.
So it's an upfront investment.
You are investing time upfront because the cost of recovery dwarfs the cost of verification.
I see. If I trust an agent blindly, it might save me 10 minutes a day. But when it inevitably misunderstands a prompt and wipes a database, cleaning up that mess consumes weeks.
Precisely. And along with managing what the agent does, we also have to manage what the agent knows.
Which brings us to privacy posture.
Yes. The default settings on these tools are almost never designed to protect you. Data is the currency of the AI industry.
So true.
Unless you explicitly intervene, you should assume that everything you type into a consumer AI tool is being logged, reviewed, and potentially used to train the next generation of models.
So if I upload a proprietary financial model to get some analysis, I might accidentally be training the AI on my company's secret sauce.
Which it could then regurgitate to your competitors in 6 months.
Okay, that is terrifying. How do we defend against that?
The defense is a default deny stance. You must actively dig into the settings of every tool and opt out of data training.
Turn it all off.
Yes. For highly sensitive work, use temporary or incognito chats that don't save history. Furthermore, as we start using multiple tools, Claude for writing, Copilot for coding, maybe a specialized agent for research, you need conventions to manage them all.
Right. The source talks about an agents.md file. How does that work?
It's a simple text file you keep in your project folder. It contains all the specific instructions, formatting rules, and context for that project.
Oh, nice.
Whenever you bring a new AI tool into the project, you just point it to that file. Instead of fighting with each individual tool settings, you create a universal rulebook that any agent can read.
Universal rulebooks, tight scoping, mechanical verification, we are doing everything right. But let's be real here. Eventually, inevitably, the AI is going to get hopelessly, stubbornly stuck.
Oh, it will happen.
It hallucinates a fact, and when you correct it, it apologizes, and then immediately makes the exact same mistake in the very next sentence.
The worst.
What is the tactical protocol for when the system just completely melts down like that?
The first step of the protocol is psychological. You must fight your own instinct.
Okay.
Your immediate human instinct will be to argue with the machine.
Oh, man, I am so guilty of this.
We all are.
I get into these drawn-out, increasingly aggressive arguments with the AI, like, I told you 3 prompts ago to stop using passive voice.
Oh, yes.
I feel like I've invested 20 minutes into the chat, and I am determined to force it to understand me. Why is it so counterproductive to just yell at it until it corrects itself?
Because you are falling for the sunk cost fallacy. And you are misunderstanding how the AI's memory actually functions.
Okay, educate me.
These models use what's called a context window. Think of it as the AI's short-term memory for your specific conversation. When the AI makes a mistake, that hallucination doesn't just disappear when you correct it.
It doesn't.
No, it gets permanently written into the context window.
Oh, so the mistake itself becomes part of its baseline reality for the rest of the chat.
Exactly. The context window becomes poisoned. Every time you argue with it, you are adding more tokens, more complexity, and more mathematical focus on the error itself.
So I'm just making it worse.
The model anchors on the bad framing, pulling it further and further off course. Trying to rescue a poisoned chat can waste an hour. Instead, you need to use the escalation ladder.
A structured way to abandon ship. Okay, walk me through the ladder.
Step one, start a brand new conversation.
Just walk away.
Copy only the successful load-bearing parts of your prompt and leave the garbage behind. A clean context window fixes 90% of stuck chats instantly.
And if it still fails in the new chat, what's step two?
Step two, reduce the scope. Your prompt was likely too ambitious for a single turn. Cut the task in half, ask for the outline first, then the content.
Makes sense. Still failing. What's step three?
Switch to a heavier model. If you are on a fast, lightweight model, upgrade to the Pro, Opus, or Extended Reasoning tier. You'll pay more in compute cost or wait time, but you need the raw architectural power to process the logic.
Step four, try a completely different tool. Move from ChatGPT to Claude, or vice versa. Different training data, different behavior.
Exactly.
And step five?
Step five is humbling. Go reread the documentation for whatever you are trying to do.
Ah, user error.
Right. Because at this point, the AI isn't failing. You are likely asking it to do something that is technically impossible or conceptually flawed. The overarching rule of the ladder is never escalate by trying to rescue a bad chat.
Cut your losses and reset.
Cut your losses.
So what does this all mean? We've covered a massive amount of ground today. We talked about matching your task to the right surface to avoid the wrong surface text.
Desktop versus mobile versus web, yeah.
I talked about turning off global memory because semantic search will inevitably pull up your dog's diet during a board presentation.
Always use scoped projects.
Right. We unpacked the nightmare of the plausible but wrong hallucination and why you must rely on mechanical verification like failing tests and physically clicking links because human vigilance simply doesn't scale.
It never does.
We explored how constraints fuel creativity, preventing the model from just giving you the mathematical average of the corpus.
The drive-through burger.
The average burger, yes. We discussed treating autonomous agents like day one interns requiring auditable logs and strict scoping. And finally, abandoning poisoned context windows rather than arguing with a machine.
A lot of mindset shifts in there.
The models are going to change. The interface you use today might look entirely different next week. You don't need to memorize all 12 parts of Darren's guide right now. Just pick the one habit that maps to whatever frustrated you the most this week and start building that muscle.
Right, because adopting this stance isn't about becoming a power user of a specific piece of software. It's about maintaining your human agency in an increasingly automated environment.
Agency, that's the key.
It ensures you remain the director of the outcome rather than a passive consumer of incredibly fluent, plausible output.
Which brings me to a final thought for you to chew on. If giving vague prompts means we just get back the mathematical average of the corpus, then mastering all these strict constraints, specifying the audience, the tone, the boundaries, isn't really about controlling the AI at all. It's actually a mirror. It's forcing us to figure out exactly what it is we want, what we value, and what our specific viewpoint is before we even touch the keyboard. Is AI making us better directors of technology, or is it just forcing us to finally be entirely intentional about our own thoughts?
Wow.
Something to think about. Until next time.